So today is Thursday, the 12th of December, 2013, and I'm sitting in the kitchen of Ida Wild. Hello, Ida.
Hello.
Ida will read for us The Wilds Collect, a lecture or storytelling by Ida Wild that she performed at a lounge event of More Than One Thai in April 2013 at the Beurschouwburg. Person.
Perfect. The Wild Collect, Chapter 1. Before I came to Berlin and my arrival in Berlin, I was raised in San Francisco, California. I have, in consequence, always preferred living in a temperate climate, but it is difficult on the continent of Europe or even in America to find a temperate climate and live in it. My father's father was a colonialist who sailed to Manila in the 1920s before the war. He married my grandmother, who brought her entire dowry from Offenbach to Baguio, including an American car, linens, and servants on a ship which took 3 months to arrive in port. She was very fond of exercise and drinking beer, even in the hot Philippine sun. My father came of German-Jewish patriotic stock. My mother was a student of the Zionist Youth Party and fought during the Six-Day War in Palestine. Her mother was a communist who read Dostoevsky in Russian over the burning broth while yelling in Polish at my grandfather to stop his hideous singing in Yiddish. She attempted to abduct his violin and drink, but was threatened in response by the leather belt that hung at the front door. Nevertheless, my mother became an opinionated and charming woman. I myself have no liking for violence, except in bed, and have always enjoyed the pleasures of needlework and gardening. I am fond of painting landscape and repairing silk cravats. I prefer tweed suits and Indian cotton, houses with large lawns, flowers, and especially mushrooms and avocado trees. I like a view I can see comfortably from the window. Up to my 20th year, I was seriously considering becoming a poet. I read and wrote hundreds of poems, but shortly then it seemed futile. My parents separated, and there was an unconquerable sadness and no real interest that led me on. In his film with the ladies dancing in the garden, Henry Wilde gives a very good description of me as I was at that time, though she did not yet know me then. From then on, for about 8 years, I was married to my handsome first wife, and I was well occupied. I led a pleasant life. I had many friends from the lesbian feminist front. Much amusement at university, where I read Wolfe, Austin, and Eliot, and many interests such as reading and writing poetry. My life was reasonably full and I enjoyed it, but I was too ardent in it. This brings me to the end of my first marriage and subsequent travels to London for further study, where I met Uncle Miriam, whom I took as a lover, which had as a consequence my eventual arrival in Berlin. There, I met Henry Wilde, who was not at all Henry Wilde. And all this led to a complete change in my life. It was then that I went to live with my handsome first wife in a woman's collective. My handsome first wife was a very stoic woman who took things quietly, although she felt them very deeply. The first terrible morning of my arrival in Berlin, I woke her and told her of my affair with Uncle Miriam. It felt as though the city had been rocked by an earthquake and was now on fire. "That will give you a black mark in the east," she replied, turning and going to sleep again. As I was saying, we were all living comfortably together, and there had been in my mind no active desire or thought of change. The disturbance of the routine of our lives by the fire that I and Uncle Miriam had started, followed by the coming of Henry Wilde, made all the difference. That happened one evening, not long after the fire, when Uncle Miriam kidnapped me on a visit to Henry Wilde, who was not yet Henry Wilde. I was very reluctant to meet this great artist in his rooms. Henry Wilde, who was not yet so, showed me his collections, which were organized neatly in paper and plastic bags all along the floor leading to his desk. He showed me his film of the young ladies dressed as gentlemen from the Midwestern American plains. He showed me his orange baldarin above the bed and many other modern things. I made his acquaintance at this time of general upset, and he showed them to me. He also told me many stories of his life growing up in the French countryside, and then traveling on foot to places like Chicago. Gradually, I told Uncle Miriam that Henry Wilde was becoming Henry Wilde, and Henry Wilde was becoming Henry to me. She was not disturbed by this, after all. There was at that time a great deal of going and coming, and there were many friends of mine beginning and becoming. Within the year, I also had gone, and I had come to live with Henry in his rooms. There, we would drink red wine and talk through the night, and Henry, who was becoming Henry, had in the meantime become Henry to me. And there, at his house, which was now mine, we became Mr. and Mrs. Wilde, but we didn't really know it then either. I was impressed by the tintinnabulation of his laugh and by his singing voice. I may say that only 3 times in my life have I met a husband, and each time a bell within me rang, and I was not mistaken. And I may say, in each case, it was before there was any general recognition of the quality of husband in them. The 3 husbands of whom I speak are my handsome first wife, Uncle Miriam, and Henry Wilde. I have met many important people. I have met several great people. But I have only known and loved 3 first-class husbands. And in each case, on sight, within me, something rang. In no one of the 3 cases have I been mistaken. In this way, my new full life began as Ida Wilde, wife of Henry Wilde. Chapter 2. Raising a Family and the Making of an American Dandy. This was the year 2004. Henry Wilde was just then finishing that film, and he was performing this duet with William Wheeler. Henry always spoke in exceeding admiration of Dear Willie. It was the moment Uncle Miriam has since called the heroic death of squatting in Berlin. Yes, squatting was done for, and everyone had begun to pay rent and look around for part-time work. I remember hearing not long ago Henry and Uncle Miriam talking about various things that had happened at that time. One of them said, "But all that could not have happened in such a short time." "Oh," said the other, "my dear, you forget. We were young then, and we did a great deal in a short time." There are a great many things to tell of what was happening then and what happened before, which led up to then, but now I must describe what I saw when I came. The home at Zionskirchplatz consisted then, as it does now, of a grand entrance and a long hall with 5 spacious rooms leading off from it. A tiny bath without windows, a kitchen, and a toilet. And one of the rooms was used as a very large atelier adjoining. I had been invited to celebrate on Saturday evening, which was the evening when everybody came. And indeed, everybody did come. I went into one of the large rooms, which had been converted into a salon, with a record-playing table. I don't recall much else about the room except that it was not the most auspicious one, and that the guests were sitting close to one another on the floor, with their feet pointed towards the center. This was my first evening in Henry's home, where I met many who would soon become friends, such as William Wheeler, Stefan Pente, and Isabel Spengler. And Nana Heidenreich, Angela Anderson, Alex and Barbara, Theodora, Pauline, for the very first time. I was exceedingly nervous to meet them, and I dressed myself in black silk smoking jacket from 1910, which I was very comfortable in. I have not since worn it, and it is a shame, as the silk seems to fall apart at the very thought of being touched, especially in the elbows. At that time, Henry was often seen in corduroy breeches and long hair in the manner of a Byronic poet. After that evening, I went to live there with Henry in those rooms, and we lived there together for 6 months. It was the very beginning of our friendship, and this was when we spent evenings in the adjacent atelier amongst the paper and plastic bags, discussing my favorite Victorian novels. That was when I mentioned the dandy, and Henry, who was not yet a dandy, became very interested in the dandy. It was the first time he was introduced to the dandy, and soon after that I instructed him in how to become a dandy and the proper manner of tying a cravat, wearing a suit, and keeping a handkerchief always handy. Well, that was the beginning of being a dandy, and he does it very well now, and I am pleased with the way he comports himself usually. Shortly thereafter, we moved together to our second lodgings in Frankfurter Allee, where we spent our evenings in the new kitchen, smoking and reading geography and plays by Gertrude Stein. Well, Frankfurter Allee was a very special house, even before it was our house, because it was the house of a great deal of others. And this is principal and salient, and first of all, it was the house of Ruth Waldaya and Bruno Pocheron, and then Uncle Miriam and Konrad Noah came to live there, for example, and so many other friends. It was there, in that house, where I cut Henry's hair for the very first time, and that was how he finally became Henry Wilde. And even long after that, after we left that house, it was the house that so many people had slept and eaten and drunk and lived in and made love in for a very long time, and then it was bought. Well, the Wilde family tree was scribbled down before all of that happened one evening in the Frankfurter Allee kitchen, which had a garden of flowers on the wall and many bamboo rice steamers on the shelves. While Henry smoked his pipe, which did not belong to my Uncle Peter, and I was considering stitching a monogrammed handkerchief or pretending to learn a German word. Ha! I never did. Nevertheless, I sat down and recorded the family tree then in the big red book, which is now falling apart after so many years, packed into my mother's boxes in Palestine, and couldn't possibly travel to Brussels from there. It was only 2005, and no one then was really quite who they are now. One time, when Henry was gone and I was at Frankfurter Allee, the CADs 1 and 2 wrote to me from Vaxholm, Sweden. The envelope was smeared in chocolate. They had been studying archery with Matilda and were working hard on the cats. The gray weather matched their gray hair. They swam in the sea and rubbed themselves with turmeric, blueberry jam, and egg whites. They repeated this recipe in our Frankfurter bathtub when they returned home, where I found them one evening sitting in the dark, lit only by candles, a favorite habit of Uncle Anton. Old CAD number one. I received such a fright from the dried jam on their faces that I squealed and ran into the kitchen. That was, of course, how I met Uncle Anton, who was also at that time Jakob, and since the beginning, Henry was quite sweet on him. I was sure that the whole affair would give Henry heartburn, which it did. Then in 2006, I planned to leave Berlin, and I left Henry, and I left Uncle Miriam, and I left my handsome first wife, and I went back to Palestine. This was just after my first exhibition opened, The Making of a Portrait Of, in which I showed collages of Joseph Alber's color theory exercises and texts on seeing in Steinese. And it was just before the very first drawings of a very wild story, the true story of Ida and Henry Wilde, were printed. They were printed by Giza Schrammel, and as I was saying, I planned to leave after that, and I did leave. And I moved into the old Arab quarters in the port city of Jaffa, where I lived very comfortably, altogether, with German, Palestinian, and Jewish activists who would often host refugees from Darfur and Sudan on the roof, and who helped Canadian professors avoid jail for attending conferences in Ramallah. But I was not an activist then, and I soon became restless. One evening, out at a local bar, I received a parcel hand-delivered by a choreographer who was living in Paris. At the same time, but visiting the Middle East, she presented me with a small white box which had been entrusted to her by my own dear Henry. Inside, I was delighted to find a silver W on a silver chain and a small beaded appliqué of a white glove. Well, it was then that I started working on the film The Making of a Portrait Of, which was not the exhibition The Making of a Portrait Of. I gave them the same name, but they were not the same, and they were not the same because the film was about a young woman who was an artist. I made this with Franz Levin in the garden in Palestine, and he introduced me to Maya Weinberg, who was a very good dancer then. Well, when I met her, we spoke about dancing and drawing, and she loved the drawings of A Very Wild Story, and then we three, Maya, Franz, and I, liked each other very much, and we began to make dances together, and continued making them until we stopped. I was very happy making them, but then we stopped making them. I became quite despondent, and then I went and lived in my handsome first wife's family home and wore black, black, and black. But then I began to miss my handsome first wife and Uncle Miriam and Henry so much that I decided once again to return to Berlin. In the meantime, Henry had moved, finally, and finally moved out of the Frankfurter Allee house and into his own lodgings. He adored the wooden floors, but couldn't get the wardrobe into the house. So it remained on the landing for a very long time. Arantxa Martinez, Eduard Montepalol, Uncle Miriam, and Isabel Spengler helped Henry move his boxes into the new flat, but Evie did not. She cooked a large pot of vegetables, and that was when their street band began. Uncle Miriam played violin, Edo strapped himself to a drum, and Evie played the ukulele. They played the sidewalk and sang pop songs in Yiddish, such as Miete Zahlen. After Evie fell in love with Uncle Miriam, and then out of love, and then fell in love with Katalin, and out of love, and then in love with Isabel, and then out of love, she left. And then we didn't see very much of her anymore. Which was unfortunate, because she was never without her Russian fur hat that perched atop her head, and she was as frightening and imperious as I imagined a real Russian czar to be, even though she wasn't Russian at all. Uncle Miriam and Henry waited and waited for me to return and watched themselves becoming hirsute hippies rather than chappish young gentlemen, for as long as I was not there, they would not cut their hair. They too complained to me that they were being forced to use hair product. Henry wrote, "The missing of you grows with our body hair." Well, he found it difficult that people found it difficult to call him a he. He was either a he-he or a hi-hi or a Vernel or a she. Then the dandy came out of the closet and he explained it to a Swedish journalist. It was about that time that he was beginning to be seen as a gender specialist. And it was about that time that Della Grace Volcano was also being seen as a gender specialist and was touring his new book. And one evening, he and Henry were discussing femme visibility, and Dell said that he did not believe that there were any femmes in Berlin. But Henry disagreed fondly, thinking of me. Recently, I came across Dell at an exhibition where Jakob Knebel was performing, and as we were watching Jakob Knebel perform, Dell said, "You know, my dear, I don't recall our ever meeting, but you look as though we have met." And I replied that we had met in his garden in East London, where upon my entrance he had promptly requested that I inspect his new nipples, to which I kindly obliged. He laughed at that and gave me a kiss, but of course the next time I met him, it happened all over again. And for this reason, he never did believe that there were any femmes in Berlin. I had by now returned to Berlin, and by now I was living with Uncle Miriam and Ruth in their new lodgings, and of course Henry was living in his new lodgings, and at that time they were all of them working on scores, and Henry was traveling so much with the laughing and so often that we hardly ever saw him at home, and he hardly ever saw us at home, that he had begun to think that it was what he had always preferred to do, and just when it was getting too much for him, and he was quite alone, and he was not falling in love very often, Uncle Miriam kidnapped him, and they went to visit Nina and Daniel and the children in Italy. There, they made sand dinosaurs and ate omelette au cep and fell in love with the sun and with little Phoebe and Carlotta. In August, Henry wrote to me, "She won't forget me not, she won't forget me not," as the train hissed, and he made his way back to Berlin feeling wistful while reading A Book of Alphabets and Birthdays by Gertrude Stein. When it became cold again, I decided to winter with my mother, where the weather was much more clement, and I could comfortably read. So I returned to Palestine, where things always reminded me of my grandmother's garden and playing under the chinaberry tree with its purple blossoms, and I was very happy there. That winter, I was invited to make a new dance in a theater in the ancient port city of Akko, and so I went up north to that ancient city of Akko, and I lived there, and there I became an ethnographer. And I studied the people there, and the Ottoman history there, and the Crusaders there, and the gang wars there, and the riots there, and I studied myself there. That dance was about being there and being in love with being there, and it was called A Natural Environment, and it was like Claire Denis and Jane Campion. There, I really tried to write a score, and I did write a score. And after that, I never thought about scores for one more minute. After the end of that, and saying goodbye to my mother and my sister and my brother, and to the ancient city of Akko, the winter was over, and my father asked me to visit him and see him in San Francisco in the spring. And I did. And when I arrived there, and I was there, that is where, when I sat down in his garden, and I wrote the very beginning of the operetta. I did not know what it was all about, but gradually I knew, and later on I will tell the story of the operetta, the music and all the people who joined us, and what this period meant, but not now. Well, about 3 months ago, Henry and I were talking in the kitchen one evening, and we were talking and smoking and thinking, and it was an evening when there wasn't any soup to stir or anyone else talking or thinking or smoking, apart from the two of us. And we were quite alone, and Henry said to me that I might be asked to present Henry Wilde and to present our family and to present myself, Ida Wilde, in a lecture in the city of Brussels. Well, I said, I am a pretty good wife and a pretty good needlewoman and a pretty good gardener and a pretty good lover and a pretty good painter, and a pretty good writer. But I find it pretty difficult to be all these at once. Then he began to get serious and say, but really, seriously, you ought to write that lecture, Ida, dear. Finally, I promised that if during the winter I could find time, I would write that lecture. And I have. And this is it. The end.
Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.